Your favorite things feel made for you. Your education should too. University of Maryland Global Campus, formerly University of Maryland University College, was made to serve the military and working adults like you. Today, we continue that tradition by offering frequent start dates so you can get started with convenient online learning that fits your schedule, by recognizing your accomplishments with credits you can earn for what you know, by providing no-cost online resources replacing most textbooks because a college education can fit your budget too, and with no SAT or GRE required for most programs. University of Maryland Global Campus, made for you. Last year, we awarded more than $15 million in scholarships to qualified students, including community college students, service members, veterans, and working adults just like you. Discover how we can make your education and your goals for the future a reality. Visit us at umgc.edu. That's umgc.edu. Certified to operate in Virginia by Chev.
Just a boy turning 17. They took me away from my home in Abilene. I was sworn I'm a soldier now. I was trained to survive. And from a boy I became a man. We journeyed to a place called Nam. Spent 13 months of living in fear. They say it's over, but I'm still here.
Welcome to Stories of Sacrifice, American POW MIA's podcast. I'm your host and lead researcher, John Baer.
My name is Mike Luring, and I have been working for Rory Flynn for more than 10 years, in particular, looking for her brother, Sean Flynn. Once I started working with Rory, one of the things that was very important was we started reviewing all of the information that we have regarding her brother's case. Once we had done that and had been communicating with the United States government, we initially decided to take another route, ultimately, for looking for her brother. This included us physically starting to work with a person from Australia, which initially contacted Rory Flynn, named David McMillan. David had information about her brother's case. And one of the things that Rory and I work together on is we try to filter and vet some of the inquiries and other things that we get regarding Sean's case. That's how we initially met Dave, and we were extremely fortunate to be in the right place at the right time to be able to get that introduction to him. So the interesting thing with Sean's case is that there's always been a lot of publicity around it, especially because of Sean's father, Errol Flynn, who was a very famous film star. There have been a lot of people that have worked on Sean Flynn's case, about a half a dozen investigators, writers, journalists, and other people who have tried to figure out what happened. And to this day, we really don't know what happened to Sean Flynn. It's extremely stressful. It's painful, it's sad, and I think a lot of people forget about how families feel, the residual effects with these cases. Regardless if you're talking about someone who was missing 5, 10, 15 years ago or 50 years ago, such as Sean, it's still something that's sensitive. And one thing that I think my mission has been, as well as Dave's, is we've wanted to be respectful to Rory Flynn. There's definitely been a culture of exploitation and profiteering when it's come to Sean Flynn's story. There have been a lot of people out there that have kind of gotten the story wrong. And there's other people out there that have written books that have a lot of accurate facts. I'm not really here to kind of dispute what the facts are aren't in Sean's background. I obviously represent the family. So we always want a fair and accurate account of anything that happens when it comes to Sean. And it's extremely sad because, like, how long do we have to endure these attacks for looking for somebody? I mean, do we need permission from individuals out there that have been making money on this for all these years to look for Sean? It's just ridiculous. And it's extremely insulting and degrading on a lot of levels for people like David McMillan and I, who have, dedicated a lot of time and energy and effort and money to help Rory Flynn. We've volunteered our efforts. We've never gone out and, tried to get money for things that we didn't think were needed or associated with the investigation, tried to raise money for equipment that didn't go anywhere. We tried to constantly, send investigators in to different locations into Cambodia to look for Sean. And, it's never ending. I really don't envy any family member that is in a position where they're kind of like attacked for looking for these people. And it's just upsetting. And I think that we would love any assistance from people that were former colleagues of Sean, or anyone out there that can assist David McMillan and I looking for Sean. Send me an email. Give me a call. John knows my contact information, and he knows that I'm more than willing to talk to anyone that could possibly assist us or help us. But, the interesting thing is we never get those kind of phone calls. So it's always been on Rory and I to rely on Dave to help us in the field. And that's basically how we got involved in this situation where we had thought we had found Sean, and it ended up not being Sean. And it created a situation now that we're still trying to resolve. And regardless of all of that and the outcome of those remains, it's still incredibly, insulting to us that we still, 10 years now, plus 11 years ago, that these things and these efforts that we made are still being attacked in the media. It's just a sign. And it's always been an indication to Dave and I that we have adversaries out there that are not, time or history, and they're not things usually that investigators struggle with when they're trying to resolve cold cases, and it can be a struggle. I've always kind of wanted to, felt guilty in a lot of ways, in the sense of when at least Dave and I started initially investigating Sean's disappearance, fully understand the background and the context of what happened. There's a realization that 17 to 20 plus human beings were lost in this context. And they were Japanese journalists. They were people from France, people from Germany. There were people from Belgium, India. There were people kind of from an international coalition of journalists that were involved in that whole story. And people always kind of refer to it as, when you're looking for Sean went missing in Cambodia, but he wasn't alone, that's for sure. There were a lot of people that went missing just days before and after Sean did. Their stories are sad, just like Sean. And I've talked to a lot of those relatives, and it's heartbreaking. All of this is just, it's sad. You look at it on a couple of different levels, especially from the stories of these families. You think about it from the stories of what happened to the Khmer people, the Vietnamese, completely mind-boggling to me personally, historically. And there's a lot of pain and suffering in all this. It's sad. There's never been really any reconciliation with any of those other people that went missing along with Sean, with the exception of a couple here and there in the early 90s. And that was it. So when Dave went out and he was investigating multiple sites in eastern Cambodia, we had no idea what the outcome was going to be. And I won't forget it, the morning that I got a phone call. I thought someone was playing a joke on me, because honestly, I got these voicemails of people, you know, kind of half crying, excited, screaming, mumbling about how they found something. And then, you know, I realized that this was Dave calling from Cambodia and explaining that they had found human remains at this one location. So it was completely a shock to myself and Rory Flynn, and we were, you know, we had no idea what the situation was or what was going to be the outcome. It was about a couple months later that officially the news came back that the remains we had found were not Sean. And to this day, we have been still receiving ridicule for a lot of the things that were associated with that recovery. And recently, claims have been made about the methods that were used to recover the remains, or the, you know, the background of Dave or myself even, and our, you know, kind of, it's almost like certain circles were treating us that we had no, permission or authority to do these things overseas. And I think if you're a family member or anyone that's lost someone, you're not going to take a no from anybody. What a lot of people don't understand, and if they do understand it, more power to them, because then they'll understand dedication, commitment on what it takes to work on these kind of investigations. But it's very hard to find eyewitnesses. When you do find them, you know, based on my experience with working Dave, there's always kind of like you don't know one way or another if it is something that could support or not fit into to something that you're thinking was Sean's case, but it's definitely a constant.
Everybody needs just the right amount of fuel to get going in the morning. For some, a nice McDonald's egg and cheese bagel is just enough to do it. Others might prefer a McDonald's bacon egg and cheese bagel. Or perhaps a sausage egg and cheese bagel. And there are those where nothing will do but a hearty McDonald's steak egg and cheese bagel. Four different breakfast bagels to get you going. Tomorrow morning, give your engine a head start at participating McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Influx of different pieces of information. And what was interesting is there was one piece of information that came up in the United States government reporting about an eyewitness that was in eastern Cambodia, was a young boy, and had saw the execution of a Caucasian individual. You know, this individual was still alive and was kind of, you know, had this story that no one had really even taken seriously. But I don't exactly know at what point, but I think it did start coming up in conversations with Dave and I about, you know, potential places to look for Sean Flynn. And we always kind of like relied on his expertise and knowledge about where the case was and what's going on. And I say these things in context to both Rory Flynn and I. We eventually decided to follow Dave's lead and focus on a particular part of eastern Cambodia where this eyewitness was located. With the information in the documents, Dave was able to track down this individual and befriend them. And the amazing thing about this eyewitness is that this guy was from a very impoverished state. We're talking about extreme poverty in certain parts of Cambodia. And the great thing about Dave is a lot of the times when he's in the field and he was investigating, there would be someone that would be running a camera. And we had an ability to look at a lot of the things that Dave did, especially with the segment. And there were two interviews that were done that are kind of the backbone of the contextual story of who Dave found. And these interviews are very important because they talk about his observations of how this man was executed and what the circumstances were. And I don't think that there's anyone else out there on the planet that's more qualified to talk about that than Dave. it goes to show how important it is that when you find certain people that are willing to dedicate their time and their safety and their life and their, a lot of things that, something special. And that's the thing that a lot of people don't know about Dave McMillan is that he submersed himself, at this one point into the mission that we have. And not only did he, befriend the family of this eyewitness that he found, but he also treated one of his children that was sick with dysentery or malaria. I can't exactly remember, what it was. Dave could explain better. It was just an extreme effort to not only help these people in Eastern Cambodia, but also to work with them to get further information based on what this man had seen a long time ago. And the sad thing is that where I'm getting phone calls from Dave from Cambodia, and for the record, I never was in Cambodia when any of these things happened. I was in the state of California in Los Angeles, and I was relaying a lot of information about what was happening on the ground in Cambodia back to Rory's home. But besides that, I would hear about the day-to-day things that were going on, and then I started getting phone calls from Dave saying that they had gone back and our eyewitness had passed away. And it was just a very sobering moment because here we are, we're looking for people and then people are dying that we're talking to. And I've had, many moments, questioning if this was even the right thing to do. Thank God we continued pressing on with all this because we were always doing this for the family. There was no kind of financial reward in the beginning for any of this. It was just kind of like this moment where Dave was on the phone and both him and I were emotional about it. And he said, we have to check out this site. We have to do something with this information. We can't let this guy die in vain. And, that's when really a sense of obligation started building in, with this case. With our situation. When we, and I use this word, we very loosely, because it's Dave that was making all of the decisions, taking all the risks, managing the relationships on the ground with other folks that were helping him. I think in a lot of ways, it's hard for anyone to fully understand what happened on the ground in Cambodia with that recovery and be able to articulate it like Dave. And that's the interesting thing. We made an effort to dig a site, and I don't care what anybody says, but these claims that there was desecration of a burial site or anything on any of those levels, it's just garbage. And again, we have every single minute of footage of the recovery. And great care was taken at that location in the sense of when certain things started coming up out of the ground, these accusations that we did anything unauthorized or disrespectful, it's complete garbage. And what is a family member supposed to do when you have information and you keep saying that you wanted to investigate it over and over again and nothing is done? I think anybody out there is going to make the decision that they are going to, sometimes think out of the box and take responsibility for their actions and go and do something. And that's exactly what we did. And you know what? They found something and then things got really weird after that. And it's not easy to look for a family member 50 years later. It's constantly challenging. There are never-ending kind of situation where the goalposts are constantly being moved. And I don't say that for any one individual or institution, but it's a challenging endeavor. And I don't think people truly understand the amount of time and effort and energy that goes into trying to look for these people 50 years later. And it's heartbreaking. I keep using this word heartbreaking, and I want folks out there that are listening to understand that, there's, at least for myself personally, there's a lot of these things that I don't like publicizing, and I don't even like repeating because they are just too darn gruesome. And it's just, it's tough. I hope that, you know, someday we can figure out what happened to Sean Flynn and Dana Stone. Perhaps there's one piece of information out there that we don't have yet, that or something out there. Who knows? I don't know. But we're still, and when I say that, Roy Flynn and I and David McMillan, we're always going to be kind of on this path to try to find not only what happened to Dave, but also at some point, our hope is to get a further understanding of who Dave found in 2010.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Stories of Sacrifice. Join us in the next few episodes as we continue this story about Sean Flynn and those that are in search of his remains. Thank you for listening.
The eagle soars above our land, flags so proudly hailed. Be proud of this America. Realize we failed to bring our missing men back home. Prisoners of war. And MIA's America. What are we waiting for? Bring them home. Bring them home. Eagle fly.
Each of us has a purpose. We are destined to do something meaningful, not only to support our loved ones, but to positively impact our communities throughout the country. What do you think a private Christian education looks like? Grand Canyon University graduates 25,000 students yearly and offers more than 225 high-quality programs across 9 colleges. Find your purpose at GCU. Visit gcu.edu.
Everybody needs just the right amount of fuel to get going in the morning. For some, a nice McDonald's egg and cheese bagel is just enough to do it. Others might prefer a McDonald's bacon egg and cheese bagel. Or perhaps a sausage egg and cheese bagel. And there are those where nothing will do but a hearty McDonald's steak egg and cheese bagel. 4 different breakfast bagels to get you going. Tomorrow morning, give your engine a head start at participating McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.